Welcome to the Good for Others podcast. I'm your host, John Valencia, and with me today is our producer, Samantha Herod.
Hey, guys.
Today's guest is Naomi O'Connor. Naomi is an expert in utilizing technology to create meaningful relationships with stakeholders. Naomi's background in data analytics, qualitative and quantitative research methods, enables her to guide organizations into implementing and enhancing technology resources to increase their effectiveness. So what does that all mean? Bottom line, Naomi is the person you want leading your development team to leverage your data to support your fundraising goals. So welcome, Naomi.
Hi, thank you for having me.
We're very excited that you're here. To kick off today's podcast, I'm going to ask you a few lightning round questions to get to know you a little better. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
Great. Mountains or beach?
Beach.
Night owl or early riser?
Neither.
Great. Sleep in, go to bed
Both
early.
Both as needed.
Comedy or drama?
Drama.
Costume party or pool party?
Neither. Is that, yeah, can that I do works. That?
Yeah. Reading or writing?
Reading.
Fire or ice?
It's so dependent on the situation.
It really is.
I'll go with fire.
Nice. And on a more serious note, who or what inspires you?
Wow. I think I'm inspired by all the ordinary interactions that we have every day with each other and how those are our lives. I think we tend to look at our lives as like these big monumental things that happen. And to me, it's just kind of like the patchwork of the day to day. As cheesy as that may sound, I've been trying to kind of like sink into that.
That's nice. All right. So before we jump into the topic, Naomi, tell us a little bit about your background.
Absolutely. So I have been working in the nonprofit sector for over 10 years, and my journey began in direct service. I am a dancer and a choreographer, so I began teaching dance for various nonprofit organizations in public school settings, in after-school programs, and absolutely loved that. I didn't know a lot about other ways to work for nonprofits. We think about it all as, what the mission is. But I was living in Chicago and I got a seasonal position working kind of an audience services, front of house, box office management role for a nonprofit. And that really just drew me into the world of learning all the different departments that make a nonprofit function, you know, from executive leadership to development or fundraising to programming, marketing. I learned and had various roles in each that helped me really understand how the puzzle pieces fit together. And I believe really still supports the work that I'm doing now. Through some staff changes and some last minute needs, I became a development assistant, which I now think is really funny because I remember telling a coworker, we were saying, you know, which department would you least like to work in? And I remember saying development. That sounds like a nightmare, like everything about it. But of course, you know, I was naive. I didn't know anything about it. So I'm not really sure what I was going off of. But I discovered that there was this whole kind of, back of house development world beyond, you know, raising the funds, which is critically important. There's administrative support. There's technological support. There's, a need for a liaison between departments because everything we do affects one another. From a development assistant, I began doing kind of database management and systems and operations work full time for nonprofits, from, you know, health and human services nonprofits to arts and education nonprofits. And then most recently, I've been working independently, both taking my own clients as well as working for Advancement Tech Services, which is a advancement services consultant, working with nonprofits, helping to do assessments, of their technological needs, their system needs, their policies and procedures. And that can look like, you know, going in and doing that initial assessment, or maybe an executive director. You know, it's a small, lean organization and the executive director doesn't have time to figure out how to build a query, but they need to send a mailing appeal. So it can be, you know, short jobs like that, or database management for organizations who don't have the capacity for a full-time person. Mm-hmm. So it really kind of can mean a lot of things.
I want to pause for just a moment because you said a crucial word in there, many crucial words, but one of them was liaison.
Yes.
So we're going to talk in a little bit about what an information manager is, but I think that's a crucial piece. You are a liaison between different departments.
Yes.
And you're a partner, a true partner with program, with development, marketing, operations,
the donors,
everyone involved. Everyone.
Yeah.
So I think that's a real piece I want to just point out before we jump into this podcast, because this is a crucial role that not many organizations have. They're slowly adopting them and understanding their value.
Yeah.
And so I think that people need to understand that you are kind of, in a lot of ways, the glue that brings all of the different departments together, because you have the information that everyone needs.
Yes. Yeah. And this, you know, information manager needs to be able, not only are they a liaison, but they're taking all the information from the different stakeholders and they are essentially translating it to the system, to the database or databases that an organization has. And so I always tell people when I'm advising, you know, sometimes we do, you know, org charts and we discuss roles with organizations. They can't just find a person who has the technological skills or the experience with a specific donor database. I mean, those things are very important and I don't want to dismiss, you know, they have to have that. It's, you know, it's logic and it's logic puzzles and it's, you know, being able to, you know, project future needs and all of those skills, those hard skills are so important. But I think a successful information manager also has, you know, the people skills in mm-hmm. speaking about being a liaison, because you are a liaison, you know, with other departments, and you're a liaison within your own department as well. And many times with the donor too. So you have these multiple worlds kind of running in your mind that not only do you need to be able to reconcile them with each other into a database, but there is that ongoing kind of training that this person can provide, and troubleshooting, you know, if the information flow needs to be adjusted, or if a, you know, new system is purchased, you know, who is setting that system up, who's integrating it with the other systems, who's, you know, getting the marketing and development teams together to discuss, you know, how can we each best use, you know, this new product. So there is a big social aspect of the role. And I think it's really important.
And with the analytics piece, there's also forecasting.
Yes.
And I think that's a huge piece that gives everyone, all stakeholders, information about where are you going, who are the right people to talk to, what are the good grant funders we should be chatting with.
Yeah.
That information comes from information within your system.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great if we can look back and analyze, you know, where we've been and where we've grown, where are areas of improvement. But we also need to be able to look forward.
Yep.
And we can't look forward if no one's thinking about, you know, how or right. No one's thinking about what information do we need to look forward. So, for instance, it's not just about like capturing how much did we get from this grant? How much did we get from this grant? It's how many grants did we apply for?
Yes.
How many yeses did we get? How many almosts did we get? You know, what is the average dollar amount we're getting from each grant? How much are we making from corporations versus foundations? What segment of foundations are family foundations? How does that compare to last year? Is there a trend we can see? Can we predict for next fiscal year? You know, there's so much, you know, I'm just spitballing here, but there's so many questions to answer. And, you know, without having kind of that foundational information, forecasting, you know, is as good as guessing.
Right.
So, and I will say on that, though, you know, I'm a huge advocate for data-informed decision-making. Yes. There is also the qualitative piece, you know, that I honor as well. So it's not just about numbers crunching. There's a human element. And, you know, all frontline fundraisers I've worked with, you know, will say, you know, it can't just be distilled to like how many phone calls I make a week or anything like that. So I'm not suggesting like it's all a numbers game. You know, mm-hmm. this is a relational philanthropy is a relational field. And we all know that. So it's the balance, though. And it's incorporating, you know, data driven decision making, but then also juxtaposing it kind of in that rich landscape with how we know our organization works, you know, on a qualitative level.
Absolutely. So today's topic is why information managers are crucial to organizational success. So that's a lot of words. So let's break that down. I think the first question is, what on earth is an information manager and what does that role do?
Yeah, that's a great question. So information manager is kind of the working title that I use for the role. And depending on an organization's size, there can be several information managers. And they do, you know, pretty much what it sounds like. They're the person that is managing and overseeing the strategy of how we collect information, how we input information, how we extract information. And in all of that, you know, how we honor, you know, the legacy of past information and make way for future organizational growth in a way that's sustainable from an information standpoint, meaning that, you know, everything we're collecting needs to be useful, not only in and of itself, but in relation to past information and kind of in anticipation of the future. So there's definitely a lot of strategy involved. It can definitely mean, and I would say more often than not, involves creation of policies and procedures for organizations, both within a department, within a fundraising team, and interdepartmentally. And it's kind of that person's sole role to oversee and manage that and all the contracts involved in that as well.
Great. So our first segment today, we're going to talk with a focus on an organization that's not currently utilizing an information manager. And then the second segment of today's podcast will focus really on how to support and leverage that role if you're currently using one or plan to implement one. So let's start from the beginning here and just imagine there's someone who's listening right now and they're like, what on earth is an information manager? I don't have that within my organization. Why do I need that role and where do they start? So I know that many organizations start with maybe a technology audit or something. I guess that kind of sounds intense, but maybe an assessment of where you are technology-wise and how you're using your data. So when you go in and you help these organizations, where do you start and how do you use these tools to help educate people along the way of what's needed and where to go and how to move forward?
Yeah. That's a great question. So I also will mention that currently I work as for a consultancy. Mm-hmm. I'm called Advancement Tech Services. And I also have clients of my own outside of that. But like you mentioned, John, we do go in and often conduct an initial assessment. So I would say more often than not, there isn't one person that has been identified for this role. There are people, you know, who might have been involved in, you know, managing information in the past. A lot of times I see like a development coordinator or a development assistant, you know, with some of these job duties in their job descriptions, but we all know, you know, how quick the year goes and how intense things can get. And a lot of the duties kind of tend to fall to the wayside, not because people don't care, but because everyone's so mission driven and everyone needs to help, you know, troubleshoot in the present. So a lot of times, yeah, that's what I see is that there is no central person managing the world. It might kind of be someone's job, but you know, tends to not be the forefront for anyone.
So when you think of this data, I'm just trying to help people kind of wrap their brains around what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Sometimes this lives in Excel documents.
Yeah.
Sometimes this this information is in, you know, some robust development software that you can get online or in the cloud, or at a desktop that's now outdated.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different ways where data lives, right? And it can just be on paper, paper and pen. Yeah. So when, what are you seeing from some of the nonprofits you're working with, where their data is currently, despite their age, right? It doesn't necessarily mean one that's been around for 20 years is still using paper and pencil, because they can could have evolved.
Yeah.
But some are at all different places, right? So I'm sure you're seeing that. What does that look like?
Yeah. Yeah, what you said is absolutely true. There's no real correlation between how long the organization's been around or geographical location or even size, you know, to include budget of the organization. So I see a wide variety of things. Sometimes there are organizations who are housing all their data in complex Excel spreadsheets or some version of Google Docs or Google Sheets. And as you mentioned before, there are several databases, what I refer to as donor databases, used by organizations. Sometimes they want to move their information into one of these. Sometimes they're already using one, but they're kind of underutilizing it. That is probably the most common thing I see. Sometimes, you know, they're paying for, you know, the hottest donor database on the market, but, you know, don't have a person overseeing, as I mentioned before, the robust use of that. And then, you know, I would say another common thing I see is that there are several data systems collecting sometimes overlapping information, sometimes overlapping into different departments, kind of what we call data silos, where data lives in several different locations, and it's usually not, the locations usually don't talk to each other, right, as we say. So it can be a variety of situations.
So let's imagine there's someone listening right now and they understand that there's some data they have. It's siloed in different systems, maybe a program, maybe in the fundraising department, and they're not talking to each other. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing you might find in this audit or assessment to say, hey, how can those systems start talking to each other and streamlining some of the efficiencies, correct?
Yes.
What kind of other information can you get from data that could be useful for fundraisers?
A lot. But, you know, we kind of have this, you know, saying that a lot of people use, which is, you know, garbage in, garbage out. So it's simple, but it basically we can only extract information that we're putting into the database. So I usually, you know, assess, like, are there procedures for putting information into a system in a uniform way so that we are flexible in what we pull out?
Nice.
And so I, you know, organizations often want advanced analytics, but if they haven't been collecting the information all along, there's no way, you know, we can't fabricate those out of thin air. So a lot of times in these assessments, it's creating new standards that work with, you know, past information, you know, to be able to have actionable results and to support fundraising teams. I can give you an example. A lot of donor databases have areas where you can kind of record significant interactions with donors, whether they be individuals or corporations or, you know, grant making foundations. And our frontline fundraisers are so busy, you know, they're out in meetings, they're attending, you know, important seminars, they're, you know, building community. And they have all these important conversations and interactions. But there's not a central location where they're taking notes on all of those interactions. And maybe they exist, you know, notes on their phone, and they're in several different email inboxes. Or like you're saying before, they might keep an Excel spreadsheet for their own purposes, but the information is never centralized and doesn't live in the database. So there's no way to pull a report on, like, what was our last touch point with this donor, or of the donors who gave X amount of dollars last fiscal year, who have we interacted with this year? Or even, you know, when an executive director goes to call a donor, there's not a place that they can look to see, you know, what was the last touch point, or did they receive this mailing? Or, and so that's just an example, but that's oftentimes something I implement for organizations is a system for tracking those. And of course, we can't record every little thing, or a frontline fundraiser would spend their whole time, you know, inputting notes. But how can, you know, entering information like that in the same place where a donor's gift information and other important information lives allow us to pull reports that are helpful, not just with current fundraising goals, but in long-term sustainability of the organization. I always say it's like, you know, when you are taking time to add things to a database, you are helping yourself, you know, in your current role, but you're also kind of ensuring that, I mean, I think it's really, it's just archiving information, you know, ensures the sustainability of the organization.
Absolutely. So in my CEO roles, I've really, especially with your input over the years, have really believed in building a strong back of the house fundraising team.
Yeah.
Because then it allows the frontline staff, fundraisers going out there and meeting people to have direct access to the information about the donor they're about to meet with, their favorite things they like to do, their giving history, all the little things, a picture of them.
Yeah.
All of these things can go a long way so that it allows that person to build a really strong connection and relationship with them.
Yeah.
And allows them to start talking about the mission. Mm-hmm. And versus having to go back in time and think about when they last met and, oh, what's going on in their personal life and what are those things that they were having those conversations about before.
Yeah.
And all that information can be there right, even right now on, you know, access in your mobile phone. And you can say, hey, I'm about to meet with so-and-so. Oh, right. This is what we were talking about. And these are the things that are really important for them and how they align with the mission of the organization we're working with.
Yeah, absolutely. And to that point, and kind of to the case for having an information manager at your organization, or even bringing one in, you know, a lot of the work I do is, you know, part time for organizations who maybe can't afford a full time person. Having that information is great at your fingertips, but it requires maintenance. And I always tell people this, you know, because they think, you know, if I spend X number of dollars, or if I get, you know, the new flashiest system, it'll solve all the problems. And while those tools are, you know, definitely useful, information management, I mean, it's in the title, you're continuously managing that data. And that means updating it. You know, if, you know, Susie Smith, you know, switched organizations that she's on the board at, that's something that not only needs to be researched, but it needs to be updated in the database. So it does, you know, with inputting information, you know, it's important that it's maintained or else it becomes obsolete very quickly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with increased technology, you know, our worlds are moving quicker and things are changing faster. And we know now too, that people change jobs sooner, you know, people, move, you know, more often than they tended to, and, requires maintenance. So, you know, kind of to that point.
Absolutely. It is something worth investing in.
Yes.
Because it really has the most long-term positive effects on an organization. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think I'll add one more thing too. All the organizations I've worked with, they care deeply, you know, about the mission, and they're so mission-driven. And I think, though nonprofits are businesses, you know, and they run like them, I think oftentimes we think of them as kind of these, they have a higher, you know, moral calling. And so with that, we all want to dedicate so many dollars, you know, directly to the mission, which is of course important. But I do believe that investing on, you know, what I call these back of house systems actually increases the ability to serve, it increases, you know, the capacity for good we're able to do for others. And so just drawing that connection, I find, you know, can be useful, you know, when sometimes people don't exactly, I think the best way to phrase it would be, you know, maybe they're not seeing a direct connection between investing in a donor database or investing in an information manager and fulfilling the overall mission of the organization.
Absolutely. And before we go to a break, I do want to say that there was an there was an article just released on philanthropy.com, I believe it was, I think this week, about an increase in foundations who are supporting work like you're talking about.
Yeah.
Work that's not necessarily program related, because they understand that there are costs associated with running a nonprofit.
Yeah, less glamorous.
Right? And they're like, all right, we'll support you on helping those back end systems and processes, because they know that will ultimately lead towards supporting the mission in the end. So, all right, we're going to run to a commercial. We'll be right back.
When Peter Pan first appeared in 1904, children didn't understand the significance of the crocodile that swallowed an alarm clock. But when they got older, they realized that time is a ticking crocodile that chases us all. Time, we just can't outrun it. I'm Kathy Thorpe, president of Nurse Next Door. Let us help you fight the crocodile. You can live in your own home and get all the help you need. It's what we do, because we care. NurseNextDoor.com.
Welcome back to the Good for Others podcast. Today I'm talking with Naomi O'Connor, who is a wonderful nonprofit professional focusing on information and data. So we just spent the last segment talking about what an information manager role is, how it supports nonprofits and or businesses that use them, and why they're so crucial, and some of the really tangible ways that nonprofits can experience success by implementing a role like this. And so I want to talk a little bit in this segment about dispelling some of the myths around spending time or allocating funds to this. Because a lot of people will say, and I've heard this over the years, well, that's not part of our mission. Right. We need to focus on program related things, because that's where all of our dollars need to go. Yeah. But as we were talking right before the break, there's a lot of foundations and donors who are really seeing the value in supporting the back operations, because they know it will only increase the reach for the mission and for the organization as a whole. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit. How can you answer this question of what could people do right now if they don't have money in their budget, but they want to figure out how to put more of a focus on data and looking at the information they currently have? What would you say?
Yeah, that's a great question, because as you said, I do get that a lot. You know, we have a limited budget, or, you know, not this fiscal year. Mm-hmm. I understand it's important, you know, but we've identified X, Y, and Z. So, we don't, as nonprofits, right, we don't all have money to, you know, pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to a consultant. You know, we don't all have funds to, you know, buy the latest system. But there are things you can do, you know, before you even need to spend dollars. And I would say, if you have the staff availability, as I mentioned before, put a point person onto doing this and protect the time in their schedule to allow them to analyze the systems and create new procedures. So, like I said before, oftentimes, you know, the immediate needs come first, as we all know, when we're in the heat of a fundraising event or a new campaign. But if you are in a leadership position and you can protect one of your staff members' time to dedicate time to this work, I would say, if you have that capacity, that's definitely something to start with. Another thing I like to say is, what areas of your current system or donor database, or however you're tracking your information, are you not using? And that's not because I'm promoting using every single aspect of a database, but more often than not, I see that people are using a donor database to record gifts and gift history and receiving an acknowledgement, but not a lot outside of that. So are you using your donor database to track grants and, you know, build information and analysis within the database? Are you using it, like I said before, to record all those touch points? What other information are you tracking, and what can you utilize in your current system? Many subscriptions include things that, you know, you kind of have to seek out yourself. Mm-hmm. So you might be paying for products that you don't even know you have? Do you have an event management tool within your main subscription, but you're paying for a third party? I often see like what, you know, and maybe you do need that third party because it has, you know, a functionality that you need. And so I'm not saying, you know, just cut it. It obviously depends on the unique needs of your organization. Mm-hmm. But dedicating that time to analyzing, like, what am I paying for? And out of what I'm paying for, what am I using? And if there's something I should be using, how can I implement that? And then creating the policies and procedures. I know I keep saying that over and over, and but I won't stop. We call it, you know, P&Ps, really. But I'm just such a fervent supporter of creating those procedures and documenting, because it will save you time and it will save you dollars, and not just, you know, your future colleagues. It'll save them grief, but it will save you. And, you know, when you're going to show up at that event, the day of the event, and you can pull up on your phone, you know, the system, and, you know, see exactly the contract and what time you agreed that they're supposed to be there. And, you know, that saves you time. That saves your staff time. Mm-hmm. So creating policies and procedures around gift processing, around acknowledgement, around, you know, we just had the big end of year. We all know that's a huge donation period. You know, what are your policies and procedures on, you know, are you in IRS compliance? And so there's so many things you can dedicate time to, you know, before I would say, you know, even assigning cost to that.
So I want to just echo what you had just said.
Yeah.
Which I really want people to hear. So you don't have to spend a ton of money right now, maybe allocate money in the future.
Yeah.
But you could take, for example, when you and I worked together, you said, John, we need to figure out how to make things a little more efficient. Yeah. And I think any organization could always be a little more efficient, correct?
Yeah, every single one.
And what that came down to was you actually going through the process of what does a donation look like when it comes in through our system?
Yes.
What are all of the pain points? Mm-hmm. You know, we I think we did a journey map of it, and we said, here's what it looks like on paper. It goes to this person, it sits on that person's desk, then they have to input it, gets approved by this person, then it gets routed somewhere else to get some donor acknowledgement, then there's a receipt that goes out, then it's, I mean, I think a lot of times we're sometimes our own worst enemy, right?
Yeah.
We want to put all these policies and procedures in place, but we don't go back and review them. And we know that over time, things change.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that that comes with this like fear of change that you and I know so very much about, right? People just don't like change in general. And so when they think of someone like you in a consultant role coming in, they're like, oh gosh, you're coming in and you're changing the way I've been doing it, which means I've been doing something wrong. But that's never, ever the case, right? Mm-hmm. We, in the nonprofit world, wear so many different hats. And we're forced to sometimes take on processes because it's the only thing we know at the moment. And we don't have resources to change them.
Yeah.
So if someone's listening right now and they're thinking, all right, I'm hearing a lot of great stuff, but I can't because of XYZ. What would you say to someone like that?
Yeah, I think you raise so many good points, so many salient points, really. A lot of the work I do is creating a better flow between departments. I think we tend to get hunkered down in like, this is what my department does, and these are my priorities, and that's what your department does, and that's those priorities. So it's creating that flow, like who needs what information? Are people getting information that they don't need? I see that a lot. And as you said, requirements change, IRS requirements change, you know, staff changes, and we have to adapt to those. But just speaking to kind of the fear of change, and I do see that, and I think that's not specific to the nonprofit world. I think that's a human thing. Mm-hmm. It oftentimes, and I think that one of the reasons why, you know, the word consultant, you know, it can be like a dirty word, not because there's like a just a cost associated, but also because people think that they're going to come in with no understanding of an organization, you know, none of that institutional knowledge, and they're just going to bulldoze, you know, what you've spent your time and, you know, your energy and your heart on developing. And so I understand why that feels intimidating. And that does happen. I understand why people are afraid. But oftentimes when I really drill down and I'm kind of, it does really involve some hard conversations sometimes with people, and in trying to figure out, where is the fear stemming from? Is it because it's going to change what you do on a day-to-day basis? More often than not, I see that it's attached to a fear of changing one of the values that underpins the organization for this person, you know, why they love this organization. And if this change is happening, is it going to shift priorities? Oftentimes I see it's not just about like, oh, this is going to give me an extra step, you know, and what I have to do every day, or I've always been doing it this way. Of course, there will always be those people who like just want to do things how they want to do it. But oftentimes it's linked to a greater fear, that there's going to be a shift in values. And so I think having those conversations and learning, like, we can adapt, we can change, we can create new procedures, you know, while still sticking to that value system, while accommodating change, is really important, I think, to work through as a team. And not to sound cliche, that like communication is so important, but it really is. I think too, people see like, you know, technology stomps forward and it doesn't wait for anyone, but having those conversations just in communicating like to everyone, all stakeholders at an organization, sometimes including your donors and your board members too, if it involves them, this is what we're doing and this is why, so they don't feel bulldozed, and really giving them a voice in the room to express like the issues they may have with it. That's important.
So, for those who are maybe not in a C-level or executive level type of role who could make decisions like this on a dime, kind of to be able to change something or implement something new.
Yeah.
What would you say for someone who's in a different role, sees these potential opportunities? What would you say to them? How could they make some steps forward in getting some changes made in how they're managing their information and their data?
Yeah, that's a tricky question, because I have found that it's most helpful if there are advocates at the levels where change can be made. But that's not always the case, as you said. So it's you know, it's always great when you have the, you know, the director really, you know, advocating, you know, to the board for what you're suggesting. But for those who might not be in those positions or might not be in those positions yet, I think as you have the time, you know, to do this through example is the way that you're going to show how helpful this can be. So you were mentioning, John, before, having a report ready for someone before they go on a donor visit, or maybe before a big event that has key information at, you know, on those donors sitting at your table or at the person you're about to meet. And if, you know, someone from a leadership role gets that report and sees how useful this is, that is a way to show them, you know, kind of just the tip of the iceberg of like how you can make their job easier and also support the organization. So I know that's, I'm not advocating like do a different job on the side of your job. Like, that's not realistic. That's, I'm not suggesting undermining your directive, you know, but you know, finding those areas where you can improve technology, you know, maybe doing a little case study and presenting it to your team. I would, of course, suggest, you know, talking with your supervisor and letting them know what you'd like to do and getting approval first. yeah, of course. But, you know, if they're skeptical, you can say like, you know, well, you know, I'd like to try, you know, set aside some time for X, Y, and Z, and would like to show you the results. Is that something you're open to? Or can I take, you know, this 1 hour every Friday to, you know, build this archive or to start cleaning up this coding system so we can report longitudinally on fiscal years past to be able to compare it to the fiscal year? And so I know it feels overwhelming because you might be sitting there and not have the power to make those big changes, but you're making your list, you know, of, oh, this needs to be cleaned up. That needs to be cleaned up. We need to start utilizing these fields. I want to create a report for this. And it, but I'll tell you, even at organizations that like have the funding, they have six people managing information, you know, and, they have the same lists, you know, so
that's right.
It's never ending. And that's hard for someone with my personality who wants to like check things off a box and then finally like be done. It really is one of those things that like you're never done. It's just you have to slowly bite off more and more. So don't be discouraged.
I will say for those listening, just recently in the last probably 3 or 4 months, I've been working with a local nonprofit here in San Diego. They're Director of Development reached out to me, was looking for a new database. The one they currently used was being was no longer going to be supported. And they had reached out to Salesforce, got the 10 free user licenses, and was like, how do we even migrate over? And so I've actually been working with them on migrating the data over. They're super excited about it because it's definitely an all-encompass system. Not that I'm touting one system over the other, but it's an example of many different systems out there that are doing some really great work and helping them be much more efficient because of it. So there's tools out there. You know, I always say, ask for a demo for some software. Yeah. That's always nice, and bring in your executive director or directors or even any level staff member to get them excited about what that could do for them. I think once people see what it could do for them, it's less scary and it kind of removes some of that fear.
Yeah. And so many, I feel like there used to be only, you know, a couple of the major systems, and a lot of nonprofits kind of had one or the other, or they were using Excel or something like that. But the market is so competitive now. Everything's, you know, moving towards being cloud based. And with that is becoming, you know, more user friendly. So, you know, your information manager, your database manager will not be, should not be the only person using the system.
Right.
And so you, there's so many things to consider when when picking a system, like you said, but they're even more user friendly than ever. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, starting to see the shift of people realizing like not only all the things it can do for them, but like I can do some of this, you know, and I, you know, as a non, you know, they might be a non, a Luddite, you know, self-proclaimed. They're great.
Wow. So much to think about. We need to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back.
The only thing worse than living in a retirement facility is letting a family member become your caregiver. I'm Kathy Thorpe, president of Nurse Next Door. You don't want your daughter to be your caregiver. You want her to keep being your daughter. So when she starts talking about coming over, quote, to help you out, tell her to go online to nursenextdoor.com. You can live in your own home and get all the help you need and let your daughter keep being your daughter. nursenextdoor.com.
Welcome back to the Good for Others podcast. Today, I'm talking with Naomi O'Connor, a technological wizard for the nonprofit world. And we've been talking about a lot of different opportunities nonprofits and organizations in general have to help use technology to really understand what their data and their information says. And before we wrap this up, we have a really fun segment, Naomi, that we call Three Wishes. And so what we want to do is say, let's imagine there's a genie here and he wants to grant you three wishes. What would your first wish be?
Oh, wow. That's a big question.
It could be anything. Doesn't necessarily have to be work related. It could be professional, whatever you want.
I would say less tribalism as people. We tend to want to, you know, not just protect ourselves, but protect our own. But everybody else has a version of who their own is. And we're not, you know, we're wired to, you know, love the people we love. And there's no way we can love everyone. But I think that if we could all just realize the equal value of each person beyond what you might personally feel, I would wish that for us.
That's awesome. What would your second wish be?
Oh my gosh. I think I would just wish for us all to have more time for reflection. Mm. And that's not just, you know, within our industry or within our country even, but all people, more time to reflect. And to be slower with our lives.
It's easy to go fast.
It is.
We're so busy.
Yeah.
But just press pause once in a while.
Yeah.
And what about your third wish?
I'm going to go with the selfish wish.
Yes, please.
For this one. I wish that I could get a massage every day.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, and to that, I wish like we could all get massages every day because I think it would help a lot.
It would add to your more time for reflection.
Exactly.
Wow. We are almost out of time for today's podcast. So I really hope we'll be able to continue this conversation in a future one because I feel like we just barely scratched the surface on this. So thank you. On a personal note, I would like to thank Naomi for helping organizations understand the need for technology and information roles that are crucial for their success. I think it's very easy for organizations to forget about technology and the integrity of their data. And I think you pointed out so much over and over again today that within the busyness of our lives, we need to press pause and we need to think about that data and we need to use that data because it's full of great opportunities for us. If we could get it all in one system, if we could train people to be able to use it, if we could leverage resources and help people understand the value of that, it would help every organization be better. So thank you for that. And I just want you to know that I'm very fortunate to have worked with you in the past, to have experienced your passion and your love for making sure that data is utilized properly. And you're really good at encouraging people and empowering them to use data for the right reasons. And I really appreciate that. So
thank you
so much for being here. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in today. For more information about our conversation today, check out our website at goodforothers.org. As always, we hope you heard something today that inspires you to do good for others.